Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Sarah Williams reporting. Voting is underway in Nigeria's presidential and parliamentary elections, which were delayed for 6 weeks because of the Boko Haram insurgency. This is the first election where biometrics are being used to help prevent fraud in what is expected to be a very close race between President Goodluck Jonathan and his main opponent, Muhammadu Buhari. Chris Stein is covering the elections for VOA in the north.
I'm sitting in Kano's foggy neighborhood. It's a densely populated area of shops and houses. Several hundred people are here queued up outside of government offices, and they're waiting to cast their ballots. The voter verification part of the day has ended, and now people are simply voting for president and the National Assembly positions. There has been a hiccup. It sounds like the ballots ran out for the House of Representatives vote, but people aren't deterred by that. I spoke with a civil servant named Abba Galadina. He says he's going to stay no matter what.
As long as I can wait, even after in the night, I'm willing to cast my vote. And I'm sure everybody you see on the queue is willing to cast his vote, no matter the time.
That report by Chris Stein in Kano, Nigeria. Somali security forces have ended the deadly siege of a hotel by the militant Al-Shabaab group in the capital city. Somali Information Minister Mohamed Abdi Marai said government forces retook the hotel at about 8:30 a.m. Saturday Mogadishu time. He told reporters 20 people were killed, including soldiers, hotel security guards, 6 civilians, and all 6 attackers, while another 28 people were wounded. This is VOA News. Yemeni President Abd Rabu Mansour Hadi has called the Shiite Houthi rebels that have taken over much of the country Iran's puppet at an Arab League summit that opened on Saturday in the Egyptian resort of Sharm el-Sheikh. In referencing the Iran-backed rebels, Mr. Hadi said, quote, "I tell Iran's puppet, you're the one that destroyed Yemen with your political immaturity." Iran denies accusations of funding and training the Houthis. Negotiations on Iran's nuclear program picked up pace on Saturday in Lausanne, Switzerland, with the deadline for a preliminary deal just days away. The foreign ministers of France and Germany join U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry for talks with the Iranian foreign minister, Mohammad Javad Zarif, as they aim for an agreement by Tuesday they hope will form the basis of a comprehensive deal to be reached by the end of June. Both sides say the negotiations have been long and difficult. Iran and a group of world powers known as the P5 plus one want a deal that will restrain Iran's nuclear activity in return for easing economic sanctions. A memorial service was held in the town of Digne-les-Bains Saturday to honor victims of German Wings plane crash in the French Alps. About 200 people, including family, relatives, and friends of the victims, attended the mass led by the Bishop of Digne, Jean-Philippe Nort. A local resident expressed her feeling on what happened, saying that it was terrible and that it was horrible for the families. A man joined in the prayers and delivered a reading in the hope that victims' families would find solace. French prosecutors have said that the co-pilot of the German Wings flight, 27-year-old Andreas Lubitz, intentionally crashed the plane into mountains on Tuesday after locking the commanding pilot out of the cockpit. A woman identified as Lubitz's former girlfriend is quoted in Saturday's issue of the German Daily Bild, saying the co-pilot told her that he was in psychiatric treatment. A U.S. astronaut and a Russian cosmonaut have arrived at their new home for the next year, the International Space Station. NASA astronaut Scott Kelly and cosmonaut Mikhail Kornenko, both in their early 50s, will stay at the space station until next March, setting a mark for the longest ever stay at the space station. Scientists hope to study the physical and mental effects of living in space as the men surpass the usual 6-month stay at the station. The two men and a second cosmonaut were aboard a Russian Soyuz rocket that blasted off Saturday from the Baikonur Cosmodrome in Kazakhstan. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Douglas Impuga. Peter Clote is on assignment.
People have been very enthusiastic about the elections. As early as 6 in the morning, people have been trooping into the polling unit.
Nigerians are voting in a hotly contested presidential election.
He says 5 to 6 armed men from the terrorist organization attacked the facility with a vehicle laden with explosives.
A car bomb explosion kills 9 in a Mogadishu hotel.
We have tried to back it up with the Vuvuzela, which we have supplied to some of these people we call scouts, because their ears are very sensitive to noise.
And in Uganda, people living near national parks use plastic trumpets, vuvuzelas, to defend their homesteads against elephants. Those stories and more coming up right here on Nightline Africa. Nigerians are going to the polls to elect a president, with incumbent Goodluck Jonathan facing a strong challenge from Muhammadu Buhari. Voter turnout is said to be high, but there have been delays and technical problems, partly due to new biometric voter cards. VOA's Peter Clote is in the capital, Abuja. Hi, Peter. What's the situation over there in Abuja?
Well, all is well here. The Independent National Electoral Commission is so far doing well, as officials of them have said. They are recording no problems or minor hitches, as they call it, in the capital as the voting process continues today, Saturday.
Peter, what can you tell us about the turnout in Abuja especially?
Well, the turnout has been really, really big. People are out in their numbers, and they have been waiting patiently to go through the process with the card readers, because sometimes the card readers are a little slow, but they have been undeterred, and they have come out in their numbers to be verified and to vote. So voting is ongoing at the moment. When you get to the polling stations, there are long queues with people waiting to vote.
How serious is the technical problems that have delayed the voting in some places?
The technical difficulties are not that big. It's just that it delays the process, you know. Under normal circumstances, it's supposed to take between 3 and 5 minutes for a voter to be verified and to be allowed to go and vote later on. But sometimes the card readers are, you know, malfunction, so it takes about 30 minutes or more to do that. But the people have been patient, and they are working with the Electoral Commission as the voting continues.
And what can you tell us about some reports of violence in some areas?
Well, there have been reports of violence in isolated places in parts of the country. Example, in Enugu, there was an explosion where an improvised explosive device was placed in a car and was detonated. Unfortunately, it wasn't valid close to where the voters were, so nobody was hurt. The bomb squad was called in, and they looked at various issues, but then calm has returned. In other places, there have been gunshots and all that. But in the capital city, there was an earlier warning by security agencies that if you do not have anything doing, you do not have to be out. You just go and vote, you stay there, or you go home. But they don't want to be seeing people running around in cars going from place to place, just as part of a security measure to maintain law and order and not to and to ensure that people do not engage in acts of violence.
Given that there were technical glitches and voting started late, would they allow people to vote deep into the night?
Well, the electoral officials have told me that as long as a voter is in queue before 5 p.m., constitutionally they are allowed to vote. So it will depend on how many people are in line after 5. And the security agencies, including the police, have been urged to stay behind to provide security. So until the last person votes, they are not moving an inch.
Meanwhile, Thomas Greenfield is the U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs. My colleague Peter Klote met her at a polling station in Asokoro near the new Capital Primary School in Abuja and asked her what she had observed so far.
So far, what I've observed has been a lot of patience on the part of Nigerian voters who have been waiting in line, many told me, since 6 a.m. Some of the polling stations opened late. People were unhappy about that, but they still waited patiently. At one polling station, some of card readers were not working, and people waited until new card readers were brought. And in those places where the card readers are working, the process moves very, very quickly. So, again, I think still waiting to make final judgments, and that'll happen tomorrow when the voting start. But so far today, we've seen the authentication process, and we've seen the voting process here, and it's been extraordinarily calm. People are waiting in line, and it really looks like an all-day process. And I know that in the United States, nobody would stand in line all day to wait to vote. So bravo to the Nigerian people, and we'll wait and watch with them. As I have told them, they have the whole world watching Nigeria today. Every eye in the world is on Nigeria, and it is up to Nigerians to show that their democracy is strong, and we are all rooting for them and hoping for the best as this election goes forward today.
Well, you interacted with some of the electoral officials. What did they tell you about some of the challenges they're facing and how are they surmounting those challenges?
They were honest about the challenges. They admitted some of the problems where card reader machines were not working, but they had procedures in place to address that. They have backup machines, and we actually saw backup machines arrive at one of the polling stations, and they were able to move forward. So this is the first time they've used this kind of technology. I expect, as others expect, that they will have some glitches, but they seem to be so far doing quite well.
How has the prospective Nigerian voters, who you said have reacted patiently, what are your views about them so far?
I think they are committed to seeing this process move forward, and they want to see their vote counted. And so they're willing to do what is necessary to see their vote counted, to see both officials and as well as private citizens come to vote. I think it's a very good sign.
That was U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, Thomas Greenfield, speaking to my colleague Peter Klote in Abuja. Now let's go to VOA's Ibrahim Mohamed, who is in Daura, the hometown of our APC presidential candidate Muhammad Buhari. Earlier, I reached Ibrahim by phone to find out the mood over there.
Well, people have been very, very enthusiastic about the elections. As early as 6 in the morning, people have been trooping into the polling units to try and get accreditation for the vote. It was supposed to have 1 p.m., but it's almost 3 p.m. Nigerian time now, but people are still in line. So they are still accrediting people, and voting has not started until after the last person in line has been accredited.
So how generally has been the turnout?
The turnout has been really heavy, especially here in Daura, the hometown of the APC presidential candidate, Muhammad Buhari.
And were the materials delivered in time? Were they able to start? You said they started a bit late.
Yeah, in many places, both the accreditation started late. And in some others, they actually have to cancel some of the elections, parts of the election, like in Jigawa State, which is just like a few kilometers from here. They had to cancel the whole elections for the House of Representatives because of the lack of material. They shifted that 2 weeks to coincide with the gubernatorial and state legislative elections coming on April 11th.
Given the number of people you said that have turned out, do you think they'll all be able to vote before the close of the day?
Yes, I asked one of the election officials here, since the number of people who are still waiting to be accredited, what are they going to do when it's time to close the polls? He explained that there is no any set time to close the polls. The only deadline they have is that everybody who needs to be accredited must be at the polling unit by 1 p.m. and that nobody will start voting until after everybody has been accredited. And they can start the voting any time. It doesn't matter. They can start it at night or any time thereafter. And they will continue to do that until the last person vote, which is any time.
What time did the presidential candidate, General Buhari, vote?
He is yet to vote because we are at the polling unit and they are still accrediting people. They won't start voting until the last person has been accredited.
Thanks. That was Ibrahim Mohammed of the VOA reporting from Daura. And now let's go to Kano, the main city in the north, and join Chris Stein. Hello, Chris.
I'm at the Denweri Special Primary School in Kano, Sabangari neighborhood. Kano is the second largest city in Nigeria, and it's also a main city in the north. There's about 100 people here standing in line waiting to cast their ballots, as well as a handful of security personnel and agents from INEC, which is the Electoral Commission. This is the fourth polling station I've visited this morning, and it's the only one that has working card readers. INEC has rolled out a new process this year that allows people to verify themselves before they cast their ballots, and no one's allowed to vote unless they've been verified. One person who's standing in line is Abdul Musbau. He works at a hotel and told me that he's willing to stand in line for as long as it takes for him to cast his vote. Back to you guys in D.C.
Thank you, Stein. And now VOA's Anne Luke is also in Abuja. And what's going on where you are?
So I'm here at a busy polling unit on the outskirts of Abuja, a primary school where hundreds of people have been queued up, have been ready to go for several hours. Voter accreditation did get underway here about an hour late. People seem to be taking it in stride. People are calm, smiling, laughing, talking. There have been some issues with the biometric card reader machines. They seem to be having trouble verifying fingerprints. When they scan the card, the person's name and photo does show up. But when it comes to verifying the fingerprint, we keep hearing verification failed, coming out of the machine. So, you know, they've been urging people to wipe down their fingers, wash their hands. I've seen INEC staff trying several different fingers, trying them multiple times, trying to get a verification. But as of yet, I haven't seen one person's fingerprint verified. But there is a procedure in place. If your fingerprint isn't verified and everything else checks out, you can just fill out an incident report form and go ahead and vote. That's something that the political parties agreed to with INEC before the election. So it's not a total tragedy, but it may gum up the works a little bit. It may slow down the process this morning. I've spoken to quite a few young voters who are out here today, several people voting for the first time, you know, a whole group of very enthusiastic 18-year-olds, and a 24-year-old woman who said that she didn't vote in the last election, but she felt that this time she just couldn't stay home.
I really want change. I want to feel how it was to vote. I want to see how it's sweet to vote. I want to know, I want to feel better voting.
That Nigerian voter talking to VOA's Anne Luke in Abuja. Meanwhile, in Somalia, officials say at least 15 people were killed and 28 injured when militant group Al-Shabaab laid siege to a popular hotel in Mogadishu on Friday. Another 50 were rescued from the hotel on Saturday. As Abdulaziz Bilo reports from Mogadishu, all five assailants in the attack have been killed.
Government forces wrested control of the Makkah al-Mukarrama Hotel from Al-Shabaab after hours of confrontation with the gunmen who stormed the hotel late Friday afternoon. Information Minister Mohamed Abdi Mare led the government delegation to assess the scene on Saturday morning. He says among those killed were four Somali security personnel. Somali envoy to Geneva, Yusuf Baribari, a woman from the World Bank who also served as an advisor to the Ministry of Finance, three security guards and six civilians in total. He accused Al-Shabaab of planning on committing mass murder, as the group did in 2013 when it attacked the Westgate shopping mall in Kenya's capital. He says 5 to 6 armed men from the terrorist organization attacked the facility with a vehicle laden with explosives, followed by another vehicle that brought them reinforcement. They planned on capturing the hotel for days, just like the way they did with the Westgate Mall in Nairobi. The minister, however, praised the security forces for their efforts that saw more than 50 people rescued from the hotel. Hotel guests locked themselves in their rooms on Friday and called security forces to tell them where they are located. The hotel is popular with politicians, members of parliament and Somalis from the diaspora. This is the fourth time it has come under attack. The siege was the second most deadly attack in Mogadishu so far this year, after an assault on another hotel in February that killed 25 people and injured more than 50 others. Abdulaziz Bilal for VOA News, Mogadishu.
Meanwhile, in Uganda, villages near national parks are shifting elephant migration routes have become a real danger. So the Uganda Wildlife Authority has been holding seminars in rural communities and giving people new and non-lethal methods to deter the elephants, vuvuzelas. Armed with the plastic trumpets, villagers are defending their homesteads. Elizabeth Pollard has more from Kampala.
Although natural elephant corridors have existed for centuries in Uganda, in recent years, growth in both human and elephant populations have led to an increased rate of elephant attacks on farms and homesteads. In search of non-lethal countermeasures, the Uganda Wildlife Authority has discovered the vuvuzela as a particularly effective tool in deterring wandering elephants. This long plastic trumpet, often found at sporting events throughout the continent, emits a loud booming sound that irritates the elephants into retreating. Now, UWA rangers and scouts are handing out vuvuzelas to community members in certain areas of Murchison Falls National Park. At an outreach meeting in northern Uganda, one UWA ranger explains to residents why scare shooting or firing AK-47s in the air is no longer an effective method to deter these giant creatures.
We use commonly AK-47. And after using these over the years, animals have, especially elephants, have got used to that kind of sound or noise produced by the AK-47. And so even if you shoot, it may look at your flap, its ears, and it continues with whatever it wants. Yes. Now, we have tried to back it up with the vuvuzela, which we have supplied to some of these people we call scouts, because their ears are very sensitive to noise, and it gets irritated with much noise. So that thing just scares them away. That is why we come up with the noise.
Common non-lethal methods for deterring elephants include setting up beehives, stringing ropes covered in chili oil across village lines, and digging long trenches. However, Jessison Blicious, a spokesman with the UWA, says that because Uganda has a wide-ranging diversity in ecosystems, one solution will not work for everyone.
Of course, some of these interventions have challenges. We have some areas that are so rocky, it's very hard to dig trenches so deep because they can't penetrate around. We also have a number of wetlands surrounding some of these protected areas like Murchison Falls National Park. So it's very hard to put any of these interventions deep under the water or the wetlands. Some places are actually adjacent roads. You can't block off a road. So that it is a weaker point. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So all these are a bit prone areas that are so porous.
The UWA says the vuvuzela works well because it has the effect of irritating the elephant without intimidating it. This is an important factor as elephants that feel intimidated or threatened are more likely to attack. No such incidents have been noted with the vuvuzela deterrent systems. Although there may come a time when elephants adapt to the vuvuzela the same way they adapted to gunfire, for now it is an effective, violence-free approach, creating an amusing solution to a very real problem. Elizabeth Pola, VOA News, Kampala, Uganda.
In South Africa, special nurses wage a constant battle to help people die with dignity. They try to ease the emotional, spiritual, and physical pain of those in final stages of cancer, heart disorders, and other diseases. They see the trauma as they watch people die of these incurable illnesses. Darren Taylor reports in this second part of our series on palliative care in South Africa.
Peter Cunnington pages through a magazine. On its glossy cover, a bearded man stands in a fast-flowing stream, his rod bent double, struggling to bring a hooked fish to the net. Cunnington describes fly fishing as one of his great passions.
Nothing gave me greater pleasure and tranquility than to walk up and down a bank, flicking a fly, sitting, watching what's going on, what insects are around now, do I need to change my fly, and then doing battle with one of those big boys that you could see just there, you could see him, lying under a ledge.
Cunnington's a patient at Wits Hospice in Houghton, Johannesburg. At one end of his room is a vase filled with yellow, white, and pink roses. Above his bed hangs a wooden cross next to photographs of his grandchildren. The slight 69-year-old has advanced colon cancer. Just more than a year ago, a doctor told Cunnington he had a few months left to live. He remembers the feelings and questions that pulsed through his body and mind.
Shocked, angry, why me, Lord? And the whys.
But shortly afterwards, Cunnington experienced what he calls a turnaround. A hospice counselor asked him if he was going to spend the rest of his life in bed, drinking coffee and reading the odd book, waiting to die. Cunnington says this approach forced him into a realization.
Life is all about choice. I can choose today to say, well, that's the end of the world, let me just curl up and die. Or I can choose to say, hang on, there's more in me yet. There's a difference.
Reference books, including dictionaries and notebooks, are piled on his bedside table. Cunnington's writing two books, one about his work teaching prisoners, the other a fictional account of farmers and their laborers in KwaZulu-Natal province.
I'm having a great deal of joy researching and getting stuff done. No, I am basically in a good place, not scared of dying. When the boss man says, come home, then I go home.
Cunnington says some people can't understand how he's able to be so positive, given that his life is hanging by a thread, as he puts it.
I have chased friends out of here like dogs because they're coming in with negative stuff. Don't come and talk negative stuff to me. Just give me.
Cunnington says others have badgered him to pray non-stop to be healed of cancer. For them, he says, he always has the same words.
In terms of my faith, I am healed already. This broken body or no broken body, I am healed. I know where I'm going. I'm at peace with myself, I'm at peace with my family, and I'm at peace with God. Know where I'm going.
He describes his condition as a blessing because it has forced him to recognize what's truly important in life.
I lived for last Sunday to be at my mom's 90th birthday. It was for me something very, very special. And it was one of the goals I'd set myself, to be there. And my sister.
Cunnington adds it was amazing to hear his grandchildren sing for their great-gran.
Jesus loves the little children. There wasn't a dry eye out of 83 guests at that bash.
In another world, in another time.
Inside his room at Wits Hospice, Cunnington listens to the radio, to the bittersweet, worn voice of Australian singer-songwriter Angus Stone. Cunnington's head rests on a pillow and he declares, I'm not dying here, I'm learning how to live. Then a broad grin creases his face and he adds, but I do hope the big man has a trout stream in heaven. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
Thank you.
This is the Voice of America in Washington, and you're listening to Nightline Africa. And still to come in the program, the Saturday Music Spot from our collection of music from across the continent. Then we'll have a commentary by Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University. And a programming note, we bring you an extended Nigerian election coverage on a special edition of Straight Talk Africa at 18 hours UTC tonight. In sports, Daniel Wanjiru has just stormed to a first major career win when he took the sports steamer Prague Half Marathon. The 22-year-old Kenyan clocked a personal best of 59 minutes, 51 seconds, with two other runners achieving times inside the hour mark. Wilfred Magoro took second in 59.57, just edging out fellow Kenyan Leonard Komon, who was given the same time. There was an Ethiopian double triumph in the women's event. Wokonesh Dagefa clocked a fine personal best of 67.14 in slightly windy conditions, winning from Yagboro Melese, who crossed the line in 68.21. Dian Nukuru of Burundi was third in 69.33. 12,500 runners entered the Sports Simo Prague Half Marathon, which is an IAAF Gold Label Road Race. Yes, it's now time for our Saturday Music Spot, and for that, just hear some music from Nigeria. So sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Sing my song, baby. If I dance, she go dance. And if I move, she go move. Baby, mama. If I dance, mama, she go dance. And if I move,
if I know see my Johnny, ha, fe, fe, ge, me, hey, yeah.
my journey. I'm looking for my honey.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're telling me this, you're telling me that. I say this is not for me. Johnny do me corny.
Johnny
do me corny. He's doing me this, he's doing me that. But I know what's him on me. He go Canada, he go Tokyo. Yesterday he say he de Morocco. He dance this Siko, he sing a willow. Na lie, na lie, na Pinocchio. This one na go be. Original go be. Johnny leave me follow Cynthia. And I don't know what to do. And he talk say I know do one. Like the way Cynthia they do. Johnny give you to Bele. He talk say he want marine nene. Who can pay the penne. Johnny bo, Johnny bo. I'm looking for my Johnny. Ha! Ayakata. Where is my Johnny? Johnny bo. Do you know Johnny? Question. If I know see my Johnny. Ha!
Can I wonder the way you want your body, give me thunder. Girl, I can follow you bumper to bumper. Girl, I can follow you bumper to fender. Oh, baby, you're wireless. Girl, I promise to be your defender. Girl, I can love you January to December. Girl, let them pay to them back to sender. Oh, baby, you're wireless. Oh, baby, you're wireless. Oh, baby, you make me grace. Oh, baby, you make me grace. Girl, I've been loving you every day. Girl, I'm loving you every day. Let nothing come my way. Let nothing come my way.
I want your body sleeping in my bed. I want your body sleeping in my bed. You got me going crazy. Oh, girl, I can't explain. Your body's so insane. Oh, girl, I can't replace you. You got me going crazy. Oh, girl, I can't explain it. Your body's so insane. Oh, girl, I can't replace you. Balogun eleni wizi eleni okumola eleni agbade eleni mashala eleni tinumu eleni matagala eleni ah wizi eleni bana eleni maruwa eleni igimu eleni aluku eleni aliku eleni saraki eleni agbade eleni ah wizi eleni. Blessings follow me everywhere I go. I'm serving the living God. And everywhere I go, my people show me love. Just tell me the reason, God. And some people still try to badmouth me. Just tell me the reason, God. Shame not because God bless me every day. Just tell me your feeling, God. Oh, anytime they hear my song, they say I'm amazing, God. And the people them know, say we see baby bad and say I'm the baddest, God. And some people think, say them bad past me, but nobody badder, God. And any party where I go, I mash up the place and turn up the feeling, God. I want your body sleeping in my bed. I want your body sleeping in my bed. You got me going crazy. Balogun eleni, wizi eleni, okumola eleni, agbade eleni, mashala eleni, tinumu eleni, matagala eleni, ah wizi eleni.
Yeah.
Don't go for you. Me, money, more. Baby, give me all your loving. mini mini mani mo. I don't go take your love for granted. Baby, baby, fire bedo. Baby, you and I just they go. Don't let bad mind stop our flow. Baby, make we just they go. The money too much, I'm dashing. How you feeling my singing? High whatever you're thinking. Can't you see what I'm feeling? Lagos to Dubai. Abuja to Mozari. Go back to Mumbai. Now is the music that want to dance to.
Your boy. Be my commandant.
Yes, and that was our Saturday Music Spot. I hope you enjoyed that music from Nigeria. And now the Saturday commentary by Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University here in Washington. Take it away, Dr. Nyang.
Hello, Africa. It's always a pleasure to share my reflections on American policy towards Africa through the Voice of America. Millions of people listen to the Voice of America to get ideas about American leaders and their opinions on foreign policy. This week, this broadcast is directed directly to the Nigerian people. Today is a big day for the Nigerians, and American policy is very much there. President Obama, as head of state of the United States and an important voice addressing American opinions on and policy towards other parts of the world, is directed towards the Nigerian elections. President Obama's voice came before the elections in Nigeria. The Vice President Biden also addressed the Nigerian people. The Secretary of State has already addressed the issue and went to Nigeria. So this Nigerian election is a very important development in African elections. When we look at American policy towards Africa since the end of the Cold War, you have to go back to the activities of President George Bush Sr. and what he tried to do in Somalia and how his policies in Somalia were inherited by President Clinton. One of the legacies of Clinton's and the Kennedys is that during the Kennedy period, Kennedy invited Kwame Nkrumah and some of the African leaders at that time before he was assassinated. And that was a very interesting beginning between America's policy towards Africa and the struggling African governments. At that time, Kwame Nkrumah was elected democratically by the Ghanaian people, but the dominant trend during the Cold War was one-party dictatorship. The Nigerians never had a one-party dictatorship. They always had a military dictatorship because Nigeria is a very complicated society. And today, when we look at elections, governance, and political leadership in Africa, the world is watching a very interesting drama in Nigeria. You have General Buhari, who was part of that Cold War military dictatorships in Africa. He was a military dictator, and he introduced a concept called WAI, War Against Indiscipline in Nigeria. And many Nigerians remember that with pain and grief. Because of the nature of their society, the man was just not something welcomed by many Nigerians. They were allergic to anybody pushing for discipline. And of course, corruption was part of the problem, and you found a very difficult situation. Today, the Nigerians are facing a very serious issue. Americans would like to see non-violence in Nigeria. Just like Americans wanted to have non-violence and civil rights during the time of King and during the time of Kennedy. And you have that famous march in Washington with King talking about, I have a dream. And he wanted to have a dream. And that dream became real when Barack Hussein Obama ended at the White House. Today, the Nigerians are facing the same crisis as the American black Americans. And today, when the President of the United States, the Vice President, and the Secretary of State talk, and African-American Secretary of State is in Nigeria talking to the Nigerians to have peaceful election and to have a government that can work with America. That is one of the reasons why this election is very important historically for Nigerians who must decide their own future without being forced by anybody. It is very important for America because America is the leading power in the world. And Nigerians depend on the dollar immeasurably. When the price of oil goes down, it affects Nigeria remarkably. And that is why the Nigerians have to vote for a good leadership of their own. If they elect President Jonathan, it will be a very important development for them. They may like continuity under the PDP, which was led by a military dictator called Obasanjo, who was also a democratic ruler of Nigeria. So that is why this election is very important for Nigerians. It's very important for the United States and the rest of the world, particularly people in the Commonwealth who speak English and are linked together with England, where democracy was a big struggle for the English. Going back to Oliver Cromwell, and the English demonstrated beyond reasonable doubt that we too can have change, but we have change where you have continuity and nonviolence in politics. And that's a lesson that comes from Britain, which has very important relevance for Nigerians. So when you do a tale of three narratives, English colonialism in Nigeria, English lesson on governance, English movement from a king like Charles I, and then they have changed and they move towards orderly, peaceful election in England for all these years. So when you come back to the United States, fortunately for the Americans, there was a civil war. Americans came out of the civil war and they move on democratically, like all the English-speaking people who try to have democracy in their government. They may have occasional problems, but they move it. Nigerians have a big lesson. If Jonathan is elected, it will tell the Yoruba, Igbo, and the Hausa that there is room for a minority to rule the country. Just like in America today, we have Barack Hussein Obama. For the first time, a minority heads the government. Will a minority continue to exercise rule to the dissatisfaction of many Yorubas, many Igbos, and many Hausas who may feel that the majority groups should rule the country? That is the message all of us are waiting for. No American, no Englishman, no member of the Commonwealth, no African can decide that for the Nigerians. To be or not to be is the Nigerian question. We are waiting for the results, hoping that whoever wins, they are not going to have violence. We may disintegrate the country. And that's the way it is. That's why the president is worried about it, the vice president is worried about it, the Secretary of State is worried about it, and the assistant Secretary of State for the United States, who is an African-American, is there to witness the narrative.
Thank you, Dr. Nyang. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. But tonight at 18 hours UTC, we bring you a special Nigerian elections coverage on Straight Talk Africa. So from the rest of us here at the Netland team, we thank you for joining us tonight and hope to see you again tomorrow, Sunday. I'm Douglas Imbuga in Washington.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
John Allen, U.S. Special Presidential Envoy for the Global Coalition to Counter ISIL, spoke recently with representatives of the coalition at a working group in Berlin about how Iraqi areas which are becoming liberated from ISIL can be stabilized, restored, and rebuilt. In remarks to the group, General Allen said Iraq's stabilization efforts will be the most important signal of the intentions of this government towards Iraqis who have been driven from their homes. Stabilization will be an opportunity for the Abadi government to make tangible its goal of rebuilding an Iraq for all Iraqis. Iraq's leaders, he noted, have started to think through the mechanisms they will need for successful stabilization operations, and there is full agreement that for their efforts to be successful, they must be Iraqi-led. A first step must begin with fair treatment during military or clearing operations, said General Allen. The Iraqi security forces and their partner tribal elements and popular mobilization forces must not commit acts of revenge, recrimination, or abuse against civilians or prisoners, and they should work closely with their civilian counterparts on planning and sequencing relief and humanitarian operations. As ISIL, or Daesh as it is called, is cleared from population centers, there will be a need for three other stabilization components: security and policing, restoration of local governance, and the provision of essential services. It is the job of the coalition working group to determine how and where it can support the efforts of its Iraqi partners most effectively, said General Allen. Stabilization operations can be expensive and will require significant resources, he said, applauding the Iraqi government's decision to include $2 billion of recovery funding and support of displaced Iraqis in its 2015 budget. The coalition is working to develop the concept of a trust fund to assist Iraq, involving both material assistance and appropriate technical support and expertise. We need to come together as a coalition, said General Allen, to listen to the plans of our Iraqi partners, encourage their efforts, and formulate a strategy for how we can support them in the weeks and months to come.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.